Hello, this is Justice Radio, a weekly show on WMPG with your host, Linda Small. I'm the executive director of Reentry Sisters, an organization that specializes in helping women and girls return home from prison. And you can learn more on our website at reentrysisters.org.
Hi, my name is Nicole Lund, and I am the co-host of this episode of Justice Radio.
And today we are speaking with John Courtney of Inside Vision, Ashley Hamilton, ED of Can Art Change the World, and Damaris Damkin, and program manager of Inside Out Project. And we're discussing an exciting art and humanities project called Still Becoming for Justice Impacted Women and Their Families in Maine. So to start us off, I'd love to hear from each of you, briefly introduce yourself and your role in the project. And so Ashley, we'd love to start with you. What drew you to this type of work in the first place? And for those who are new, can you let us give us an overview of what is Can Art Change the World?
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much for having us. My name is Ashley Hamilton. I'm the executive director of the Can Art Change the World Foundation and also the director of our prison art program. And we're thrilled to be working with you all on this Inside Out project and watching Reentry Sisters and the community in Maine create something really beautiful over the coming months and this year to show the beautiful humanity of the women and girls who are incarcerated or impacted by the justice system in Maine. So I think maybe a little bit first about our organization. So Can Art Change the World is a nonprofit that was founded by the French artist J.R. J.R. is a public, he makes massive mural art all over the world in global art projects. And our nonprofit is an extension of his work. So if you aren't familiar, really recommend looking him up. Our nonprofit holds three large programs right now, although we also work on other programs from time to time. But one is called the Inside Out Project, which I'll have Dama, my colleague here, share about in a moment. The second is a project we've been working on in Brazil that JR co-founded called Casa Amarela. He co-founded it 16 years ago, and it's an art school and cultural center for the women and children of the Morro da Providencia favela that we support there. And then our prison art program, which was born of a project that JR did back in 2019 or across 2019 to 2022 in Tehachapi, California, within the California Department of Corrections. And it is at the Tehachapi facility, which has three yards on it. And he worked across two of the yards. The one that the kind of main project he did was he photographed 28 incarcerated men, as well as a handful of correctional officers and victims of harm in California, photographed them, interviewed them, and then created a large mural installation on the yard there at Tehachapi, and then also made a film about that project. He then went on to do other large mural installations, and there was eventually actually an Inside Out project that occurred at Tehachapi as well. So multiple touch points across those 3 years with the community there. And we have now gone on to build out programming at the facility where we do classes and workshops. I'm actually just coming back from LA a couple of days ago. We had a graduation for 22 of our students who just completed our From Walls to Wings class. And then we got to do an installation, an Inside Out installation of their portraits with their family members. So that was really special. Don't want to be too long-winded, but just want to give you a sense of what's happening in our prison art program. And we're also doing work in the French Ministry of Justice system. So in France, this summer, we're going to be in 11 prisons there in person, and then joining 15 prisons in France virtually throughout the fall and winter, beginning programming there. And then this is very much early days, but we're also starting to build some program in Brazil, which is, as I mentioned, where our Casa Amarela project has lived or lives. Yeah, that's what's up at Can Art Change the World? Yeah. I didn't answer the question how I was drawn to the work, but It's been a long, winding road. I have been doing prison art in ed work for the last 16 years. So I would say what drew me is I really believe, particularly when you are drawn to working in and around the criminal justice system, it's often like a bit of a calling. And I didn't know I was called into it until it was happening. But I guess the original seed was that I met a really incredible music facilitator here in we're in New York City, in New York. He goes by Spirit Child, and he was doing some work in the prison and jail system in New York. I met him when I was really, really young, and I was incredibly inspired by him and his work, and he took me under his wing and mentored me for quite some time. And so I would say that was the original seed. And then maybe the last thing I'll add is that I think maybe what the next kind of dot in the timeline that really pulled me in was the first time I walked into a women's max facility. This was maybe a year later after meeting Spirit. And I was having a conversation with a woman who was in my class that I was assisting in. And I asked her why she had joined it. It was a theater class. And I said, "Why are you here? Like, why did you sign up for this class of all the things, you know, all the other programs you could be doing or hanging out on the yard or whatever?" And she said, "Well, this is the only place I forget where I am." And that sentence, I think, kind of changed the whole trajectory of my life because I really wanted to understand what it was about the arts and what it was about that space that could create such an opportunity. So that's me. Thank you.
That's beautiful, Ashley. There's a lot going on there, right? Beautiful, beautiful work. And I wonder if we can figure out some sort of cross-cultural trip where we can all go to France and bring our work
I love that idea.
over there.
Yes. And Brazil, maybe. Yeah.
And Brazil as
Yeah,
well. I mean, we're going everywhere. And I really appreciate what you said about that, you know, being formerly incarcerated myself and understanding any program that humanizes people, that draws you inward, right, instead of your outward circumstances, and allows you to express yourself in safe and beautiful and expressive ways, is so important to step out of that current space that you're in, right, in your heart and your mind, and that oppression. And so, arts and humanities can certainly do that. And everybody on this call has seen that directly for themselves or experienced it for themselves. So, this is such important work. And thank you. And thanks to JR for his vision, and what it's grown into, and touching so many people across the globe. And we are really honored at Reentry Sisters to be part of this global community now. It's super exciting. You mentioned Inside Out Project, so we're going to go to you, Dhamma, next, and talk a little bit about how this connects local communities to this global platform and the global community, right? And about your role and what drew you to this kind of participatory storytelling style.
Thank you so much, Linda. Hi, everyone. My name is Damaris, and I'm the program manager for the Inside Out Project. I've been a part of the team for almost 6 years now, and I joined in 2020, in the middle of COVID. So it was a very particular point in time when I came into the project. I had in my graduate studies and my undergraduate studies was doing politics, rights and development, and focusing on art and social movements and transitional justice. So I was, have always had a really strong passion for art and in history and in social driven causes. And I had heard about JR before, was aware of his work. I'm originally from South Texas, from the border. And so when I first found out about his work, that the first time that I really felt like that I stopped and paused was when I saw Kikito, which was the piece that he did on the border wall. He photographed a little boy that lived in the Mexican side of the border and created this giant that basically peered over the wall. And so that to me really spoke to me because that was where I grew up. And I had, hadn't seen anything like that done before. And it resonated with me because I could totally see myself in in that work. So I was already aware of JR, but I had no like plan to end up involved in the studio. But having been in New York during my college time and then COVID happening at the same time, I came across the internship that was being offered at the time. So I started working at the studio, just thinking about it as a temporary internship. It was something that I felt like really aligned in my interests and my passions, and that I really was excited about. And then, just as time went on after my internship ended, I stayed with the team and I got to really be embedded in the project. Now it's been 6 years, which is crazy to think. And over time, really, and now all of the years that I've been in the project, something that is so just like never gets old is really the ways in which people continue to work together to build things with each other. And so Inside Out is called the People's Art Project. That's kind of the name. It's Inside Out Project, but we call it the People's Art Project. And the whole, spirit of the program is that it's by the people, for the people, from the people. And the way that we work is that we're able to be connected with individuals all over the world who have stories that they want to tell, or causes that they want to raise awareness about, or a message that they want to share, that, to make themselves be seen and heard by the greater community outside of maybe even within their neighborhood, but also, in the greater global community. And so the project serves as a platform. What we do is we facilitate public art projects in all corners of the world where people choose the message that they want to advocate for and the stories that they want to tell and the people that they want to invite to participate in the project. They take portraits of the community members, they share those images with us. We facilitate these projects by basically providing the resources to create the massive installations that are, printed on paper, very much like JR. Does his own work with paper and glue, making giant wheat pastes. And so we'll facilitate these projects by creating these materials and supporting the process anywhere in the world where they are, and then shipping the posters back to the community so that the people can take it on in their own hands out into the street and make these installations happen. And every single time that a new project happens, it's unique. It's not, there are shared themes and topics that we've seen as the years have gone on, where more and more, of these conversations, we're seeing connections happen around the world that people are talking about similar things, that care about similar things. But at the same time, each of these projects is so unique because it is comprised of the people that make up these communities that are only there. You will never find these people anywhere else but where they live. And so we are able to see this human library, this map, this human geography that we, as the project has grown over time, now that it's been 15 years since the project began, it's grown into the largest participatory art project that exists and that is still active to this day. Day in and day out is what we do. I get to have these conversations with people that reach out to us, that have these ideas, that are inspired, that are motivated to do something and make something bigger than themselves, and have this shared passion for changing the world through art, changing, perspectives and sharing their stories. And so that is something that just will never get old. It doesn't matter if the projects, maybe they appear to look the same. They're all black and white portraits. It's always faces, but they're never the same. They always look different. The locations are always different. And what people come up with just like blows our mind, every day, the way that people push the boundaries of what you think is possible. It just continues to be expanded. So these barriers continue to be just, they disappear the more that the project continues to grow. And so that's a little bit about myself, a little bit about the work, what we've been doing, what we, look forward to building together with you and the Reentry Sisters, and kind of adding on to that, weaving into the fabric of the stories that we've been vanguarding here with the project.
Wow, thank you so much for that, Dharma. Such a rich history in those 15 years, right? I love so many things that you said, but one of the things that really struck me was the People's Art Project, because the people own the message. And it's an incredible form of expression, particularly when we're talking about populations that are generally silenced and overlooked. And what a beautiful way to put themselves out there in the community, right? Not just the local community, but I think I read on your website like over 600,000 people have participated. That's a lot of voices. That's a lot of lifting up what people care about and who people care about and our similarities and our differences, right? Which makes us all beautiful. So thank you so much, and we're looking forward to disappearing barriers in our own state here through this project as well. So you are listening to Justice Radio with your hosts Linda Small and Nicole Lund, and today we are speaking with Ashley Hamilton, Damaris Duncan, and John Courtney about an exciting reentry, family, and community art program. So, John, you played a key role in bringing this whole crowd together, which is really, was super grateful to you and Inside Vision. Can you talk a little bit about this collaborative process and sort of what did you have in mind when you started putting these puzzle pieces together?
Yeah, thanks, Linda. Yeah, I've been doing programming in Maine prisons for about 8 or 9 years, bringing in films and filmmakers, visiting artists, musicians. And early on that process, I was the film programmer at the Portland Museum of Art for about 7 years. And while I was there, we had shown two films that JR was involved in, the Oscar-nominated Faces Places, which is an amazing film with Agnes Varda, and then a film called Paper and Glue, which kind of shows his evolution from a street artist to sort of as engaged social artist that he is now. And there's a section of Paper and Glue that's about the Tehachapi project at the Supermax in California. And I was really attracted to that. And I was interested in maybe seeing if we could line up a screening of that film. And I reached out through my friend Callie, who's the artist Swoon, to see if she could connect me with JR, to see if he might be able to do like a Zoom Q&A. And through that communication, talking to the studio, I learned about the Inside Out project more deeply. And I was like, I would love to bring this to Maine. Like, this probably goes back 3 or 4 years, this conversation, probably even predating Ashley and Damaris' involvement there. So we've got the right people at the team now, but it was a long conversation about how we could do one of these public wheat paste website projects here. When Ashley came on with, and I should mention, I do a lot of that work, as you know, with Inside Vision, which is the arts branch of the Maine Prisoner Advocacy Coalition. Last September, Ashley and a couple members of her team came to Maine. We did a series of workshops in Wyndham at the Women's and Men's Center and the Women's Reentry Center. And we did a public screening of Tehachapi with Smooth Feather at their theater in Keyser Falls. And it was really productive, great response to it. And that just kind of laid the foundation for, like, let's make one of these Inside Out projects happen in Maine. And I knew from my work and from actually working with you, Linda, that women's stories are not told enough, and they are always kind of the last stories to get heard, and thought that working with women who have experienced incarceration would be a really powerful and potent group of stories to work with. And so everything is aligned and we're here, and now we're working on the project and collecting photos and moving forward with it.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, John. It is super exciting. I think this is the first project of its kind here for women in reentry, and certainly women in Maine. And also the first project where we really are lifting up the family unit, right? Right, it's not just or only the women's voices, but to bring in the voices of their children, their spouses, right, significant others, parents, siblings, which is so important because, like this show has demonstrated over and over again, Being incarcerated is not an individual situation, right? It's a community situation, it's a family situation, and it impacts everybody, even if you've never been incarcerated yourself. So this is a great way to lift up all the voices that are impacted by this often brutal and oppressive system. So thank you so much for that vision that started, 3 to 4 years ago, and we're starting to see the culmination of it this year. It's super, super exciting.
John is such an incredible connector. I always tell him, and it's so grateful that he connected to, JR's studio, then to Can Art Change the World to me, and then us to you all. And yeah, John so graciously hosted us last fall, and it was so beautiful to get to spend some time in the facilities there and get to know a bit of your community. Yeah, it was a really special weekend. And so I'm glad we're continuing together.
Yeah, more to come.
Yes.
So I'm curious about the model of black and white portraits in public spaces. What do you think it is about that imagery in particular that's so powerful across so many different communities?
A great question. Donna, I feel like you might.
Yeah. So when people ask JR that question, they ask him, like, why do you use black and white photography? And his answer was, well, it was the cheapest thing to print. And he was doing, when he started his practice, was he was taking portraits of his friends. He grew up in the suburbs of Paris, and so he started documenting their outings, going out and doing write-ups, and then he started printing those photos and started pasting them. And so he just had to, find what was accessible, what would work for him. And so he started going into the black and white printing for the practicalness of it. But that really became his signature. And, then he started just showing the faces and the portraits. And when he started his first project that really kind of you see the birth of the Inside Out in his practice was called 28 millimeters, which is where he took a 28 millimeter lens camera and started taking portraits of his friends. But what happens with the camera at that lens dimension is you have to be really close, and what ends up happening is your face kind of becomes like distorted because of the depth and the lens of it. And so you have to get really close up, and he was making his friends kind of make these faces to be, really playful and just having fun. But what was happening at the time was that there was a lot of, buzz in the media about the youth and them, associating them with being criminals and associating them with, these negative stereotypes because they're from the suburbs, because they're from, poor neighborhoods. And so what these portraits were doing was kind of playing on that idea of what does this hoodlum, quote unquote, look like, and they're just kids, having fun. And so he brought those portraits into the city of Paris, not from the, like came from the outskirts into the city and started doing those pastings. And so people would just come across these faces and like almost looking like cartoons. So what happens when you come across a photo of a person is you kind of are instinctively drawn to pause and look at the expressions and detect the emotion that is being expressed in just the facial expression. So I think that there's a big, touch in our human instinct of just connecting with each other when we look at someone else, how they express themselves in their face, in their facial expressions, that I think that is something that is really powerful, in the project, because in each of the portraits, there's an emotion that's being expressed. The person is saying something, even, without having to speak, you can hear them and connect with them on a real human, instinctual level.
Yeah, that's a beautiful. Oh,
No,
no.
I was just gonna add too. I think at some point, of course, also then JR becomes known, right, for this. I mean, both JR's work being in black and white in his projects, but then the Inside Out project becomes known as what it is, and it's the aesthetic of it. I think there's also something, I don't know, as someone who, when I think about when I see the project and I see portraits of the project, it's interesting how the black and white and the size of the portrait, the same size, and the sort of repetition of it creates almost this interesting dichotomy of that, like, we are both all the same and so different at the same time. And I kind of feel like the aesthetic, the black and white, the size, the way that, the portraits map, quote unquote, match across the 600,000 people who have participated, while at the same time, each of these people in this kind of uniform look are individual lives with different stories and their own, dreams and history and heartbreak and trauma and, joys. And yet at the same time, we're looking at sort of like this, it's just this interesting dichotomy between the individual and the group, I think. And I think the aesthetic plays to that.
I love that. Thank you. When I think about humanness and connection, which is such vital links to moving from the isolation of being incarcerated into being embraced in a community, right? A reentry community. And so when I think about the individual impact and the impact as a whole, that's a beautiful thing because we're trying to not only show that this sisterhood, right, this community of women who have gone through this similar experience, but also how they're actually still part of the community in a larger sense, whether that's in the state or wider than that. Thank you so much, Ashley, Damaris, and John, for your creativity and enthusiasm for this project for justice-impacted women in Maine and allowing them to tell their stories in this very unique way. And we look forward to hearing more about this project as it progresses. And once again, if you're a justice-impacted woman in Maine or you know of one, please contact us at stillbecomingmaine@gmail.com. And listeners, we have some exciting shows coming up for you on Justice Radio with our new hosts, Healing First. They're a transformative justice collective that's led by survivors of harm, advocating for restorative and transformative justice processes. And please visit Justice Radio show page on WMPG.org for our archived episodes that's aired on WMPG, WERU, and WMHB. And a big thank you to our editor, Aaron Pyle, and to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series.